Writers who die of AIDS sometimes leave their unfinished work in the hands of trusted friends. Poet David Trinidad has edited a forthcoming volume of poems by his friend, Tim Dugos, who died of AIDS in 1990. Dugos was a contributing editor of the gay paper Christopher Street. Last year, we invited David Trinidad to read a poem by Dugos called DOA.
DOA. You knew who I was when I walked in the door. You thought that I was dead. Well, I am dead. A man can walk and talk and even breathe and still be dead. Edmund O'Brien is perspiring and chewing up the scenery in my favorite film noir, DOA. I can't stop watching, can't stop relating. When I walked down Columbus to Endicott last night to pick up Tor's new novel, I felt the eyes of every Puerto Rican teen, crackhead, yuppie couple focus on my cane and makeup. You're dead, they seemed to say in chorus. Somewhere in a dark bar years ago, I picked up luminous poisoning. My eyes glowed as I sipped my drink. After that, there was no cure, no turning back. I had to find out what was gnawing at my gut. The hardest parts, not even the physical effects. Stumbling like a drunk, Edmund O'Brien was one of Hollywood's most active lushes, through 40 sets, alternating sweats and fevers, reptilian spots on face and scalp. It's having to say goodbye, like the scene where soundtrack violins go crazy as O'Brien gives his last embrace to his girlfriend come Girl Friday, Paula, played by Pamela Britton. They're filmdom's least likely lovers. The squat and jowly alky and the homely, fundamentally talentless actress who would hit the height of her fame as the pillhead acting landlady on My Favorite Martian 15 years in the future. I don't have 15 years, and neither does Edmund O'Brien. He has just enough time to tell Paula how much he loves her, then to drive off in a convertible for the showdown with his killer. I'd like to have a showdown, too, if I could figure out which pistol-packing, brilliant-teened, and ruthless villain in a houndstooth overcoat took my life. Lust, addiction, being in the wrong place at the wrong time? That's not the whole story. Absolute fidelity to the truth of what I felt, open to the moment, and in every case a kind of love. All of the above brought me to this tottering, self-conscious state. Pneumonia, emaciation, grisly cancer, no future, heart of gold, passionate engagement with a great B film, a glorious summer afternoon in which to pick up the ripest plum tomatoes of the year and prosciutto for the feast I'll cook tonight for the man I love, phone calls from my friends, and a walk to the park, ignoring stares to clear my head. A day like any, like no other. Not so bad for the dead.
That's a wonderful poem.
Yeah.
Would you tell us why you like it so much?
Well, I think that it combines several things. You know, not only the autobiographical material and the fact of Tim's illness, but also his love of popular culture and movies, which occurs throughout his work, you know, from the very beginning.
That's a love you share.
And, yes.
Because you write a lot about that in your poems, too.
Yes. And in fact, Tim was very influential, had a big influence on me at the beginning. And I think he was one of the poets who really got me in touch with my love of popular culture and got me into writing about it.
Now, there's a poem of yours I'd like to hear, and it's a poem about Tim. And it's called Driving Back from New Haven. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about the circumstances that you wrote this poem.
I wrote the poem Driving Back from New Haven in 1988. I had just moved to New York from Los Angeles, and Tim had just moved from New York to New Haven, where he was enrolled in the Yale Divinity School. And he drove me up to New Haven and showed me around and then drove me back to Manhattan, and this is about the trip back to Manhattan. Driving back from New Haven, Tim looks at his watch, reaches into his pocket, takes out a small plastic container, and swallows an AZT pill with a sip of Sprite. "Poison," he mutters under his breath. I glance over at him. We haven't talked about his health the entire trip. "How does it make you feel?" I ask. "Like I want to live until they discover a cure," he snaps. We travel in silence for a while. I stare out the window at all the green trees on the Merritt Parkway. Then he says, "I resent it. I resent that we were not raised with an acceptance of death, and here it is, all around us, and I resent it. I resent that we do not know how to die."
Do you remember what you said to Tim after he said that?
You know, I don't, and I'm pretty sure that that's a pretty accurate description of what we talked about. But when I showed it, I sent it off to Tim after I wrote it with a note saying, "Please like this," and he responded and said that he did indeed like the poem, which was a relief. And I think he was surprised. I remember him saying that he was surprised that he was so angry or sounded so angry in the poem.
How much of your writing has been about AIDS?
Very little, actually. This is one of the few poems I have that where I directly address it. I think it sort of seeps between the lines in ways that I don't even know about. But it's a very painful subject, and I've lost many friends and peers to AIDS. So I don't think it's something that I've, you know, fully explored yet in my own work.
Is it a subject you just as soon not write about and that you feel is being well-served already?
Partially, yes. I feel that there are many poets who have been sick, who have written about it, or who have lost lovers, you know, and written about that, the pain of that loss. I just assume that someday I probably will write about it, but it's just too painful to tackle yet.
David Trinidad recorded 1 year ago. His poem, Driving Back from New Haven, is included in his latest book, Answer Song, published by High Risk. Trinidad is the editor of the forthcoming book, Powerless, Selected Poems, 1973 to 1990, by Tim Dugos. It's due out in the spring from High Risk and will include the poem, DOA. This is Fresh Air.